We decided at a staff meeting a little while ago that it would be good in the summer months, since we don't have anything between our services, to occasionally gather. And one of the things that immediately surfaced was how important it is for us to talk about how good God is to us, how his grace is enough for us, how he has been kind to us, how our God has brought not just salvation, but his blessing into our lives. And so we call this time a testimony. We're giving the story of God's goodness in our lives. It's what the elders enjoy on a regular basis as we receive new members. We get to hear the story of how people have come from death to life, how salvation has entered their lives, how God has blessed them, and we get to share in that. And we often have said, boy, what a blessing that we get to share, and we'd love to share it with other people. And so we've set aside this time, and one of the people that immediately came to our minds was Ham, and he had just recently offered to share his testimony. So we're blessed this morning. Most of you know Ham has been wrestling with cancer, and he's under hospice care now, and so we keep him in our prayers, and he has our love and our support, and now we look forward to hearing from him what God's work is in his life. So, Ham, Joanne, please come on up and share with us.
Good morning. Testimony is typically, as Todd said, the story of how one comes to Christ. I've done that here before, and I think what might be more interesting is the story of what's happened in the last 12 months, because there is, well, it's when the rubber meets the road, so to speak. It's when your faith is really going to get tested. So if you want to sit down, this is going to take a while.
You thought Todd was long?
Well, it started about a year ago. We had gone to Maine for a conference. Joanne and I went both. We drove up, and we drove because Joanne had recently discovered that she had seven brothers and sisters that she's never met, and they all live in Rhode Island. And so we were going to visit them on the way home, and we did that, and it was a fantastic meeting. When we got home, I had a doctor's appointment that I had made prior to going on this trip, and I had a nagging pain in my back that I couldn't get rid of. It was like muscle pain, you know? So I went there, and he really didn't do much for that. And a couple days later, I had a sharper pain in my belly, which I knew something was wrong, so we went back. And he poked and prodded a little bit, and he said, I think we need to look at your gallbladder. So he sent me across the hall. This is all down in Queenstown. You know, they have this wonderful building down there. Everything's in one place. So we went down there, and they did this ultrasound. And before I got out of there, the technician said, the doctor wants to talk to you. You better go back where you were. So we went back, and he said, something I don't like. I think you need a CAT scan. So we did a CAT scan a couple days later. Friday, the 30th of August, I went back, and he said, you have a tumor on your liver that is 11 centimeters. I don't know how good your metric is, but 11 centimeters is about the size of a softball. In addition, you have tumors on your spine, on your pelvis, in your ribs. I wasn't hearing him after the list got that far down. I remember thinking, this is metastatic cancer. This is stage four. What happened to stages one, two, and three? How come we're starting at the end? People die at stage four. I had no idea how long I had. I was guessing it was weeks. So the doctor had sort of mercifully left the room. Anyway, he came back and he said, I've called an oncologist, and you'll hear from him shortly, and you probably need to go talk to him. So before we got home, the oncologist had called, and he wanted to see me on Monday. So we went to see him, and we spent most of the month of September trying to figure out what this was. He did a biopsy, and that was inconclusive. They did a bunch of other tests. They did an endoscopic ultrasound. This is really cool. They take an endoscope and they shove it down your throat. And they look all around inside, and they still couldn't find anything. So my official diagnosis was adenocarcinoma. I don't even know what that means, but it's bad. Of unknown primary. So we started chemo early October. And we laid out a regimen of 6 cycles, 2 different drugs. And it was, I think because they couldn't figure out where it started, they kind of used a shotgun approach, you know, that's kind of broad spectrum drugs that designed to kill almost everything. So we did that. And it really wasn't bad. I mean, most of you, I was here a lot of that time, and most of you told me, boy, you really look good. And it really wasn't a tough trip. I mean, I've talked to other people that have gone through chemo, and there are some real horror stories, and I didn't have any of that. So I was really grateful to the Lord for that relief. So we finished that up about early February, and we did a CAT scan. And the CAT scan came back with mixed results. Some tumors were smaller, some were larger. Not the result he was looking for. So we fiddled with the formula a little bit. We took one drug out and we put another drug in that was pills. So we started that, I guess, last of February. And the pills were awful. I felt terrible. And we had a conversation at the very outset, the oncologist and I, and I said, I am not interested in how long you can keep me alive. I am interested in living. I'm interested in quality of life, not length of life. So if I'm going to stay alive to be hugging the toilet every morning, forget it. I'm not interested in that. And that's kind of where we were headed with these new pills. So we started backing down on the dose till it got to be tolerable. But it still wasn't good. I was still feeling awful most of the time. So after about 3 cycles of this, he said, well, let's do a CAT scan. Let's find out if we're doing any good. So we did a CAT scan. Or no, actually, it was a PET scan. And what he saw was that all of the existing tumors were bigger, and there were 5 new ones. So we had a very short meeting with the oncologist after that, and I said, I see absolutely no justification for continuing. Unless you have something else to offer me, we're done. And he said, I really don't. So that was the end of our relationship with the oncologist. It wasn't a bad relationship. I mean, I don't mean that at all. But he was done. Traditional medicine, which is what we had elected to do, as opposed to chasing all over the country looking for the latest test or the latest, you know, trial that was going to be done someplace. We had elected to go with traditional medicine. And they were out of ideas. So he said, the best we can offer you now is comfort care. And I said, if it's better than this, that's what we need. So that's what we did. And we signed up with the Hospice of Queen Anne's. And their approach, of course, is completely different. Their approach is primarily pain management. I didn't know this. Maybe you did. But cancer hurts. Did you know that? It is painful. So all of comfort care is about pain management, or most of it. So we got that straightened out, and we got some steroids, which I'm taking now. And they have been a real help because they give me a little more energy, give me some appetite, I'd lost 30 pounds over the course of the 4 months, 5 months of chemo. And slowly getting some of that back. But anyway, so that's where we are, comfort care. And we've been doing this now for 2 months?
Just about a month.
A month. So how has all that affected my faith? Well, I had said to a lot of you when we first found out about this, there's only two ways this is going to go. Either God's going to do a miracle and I'm going to get to stick around for a while. Who knows how long that is. Or he's not and I get to go home early. Either way, I win. And that's still true. I don't know how early is, but if God's not going to do a miracle, and I mean, far be it from me to shorten God's arm. I mean, God can still do whatever he wants to do. He could turn this around tomorrow if he chooses to. But if you look at the statistics, he doesn't very often do that. For people who discover that they have cancer in their liver at stage 4, the survival statistics indicate we're down in single digits here. So I'm expecting that this disease is going to kill me. Now, what to do about that? How, you know, Francis Schaeffer's famous question, how should we then live? Well, I mean, the simplistic answer is one day at a time, because I really don't know from one day to the next how I'm going to feel or what it's going to bring. You know, Joanne can tell you about the little episode we had a couple of weeks ago that scared the daylights out of everybody. But basically, my prayer is that over the next few months, whatever it is, that God can use that time to mirror himself in me. And I have no real idea how to do that. I mean, it's not something I can go find verses in my Bible that tell me how to act, how to live. But I do know that I am surrounded by people who love me, people who pray for me, people who care about me. And that is an enormous source of strength and power. I really believe that whatever happens, that God is going to use this time, however long it is, for his glory. Maybe there's somebody who, in the course of the hospice ministry team, or people that I will come in contact with through the care, that don't know the Lord. And maybe they will look at me and say, how come you're not scared? And we can have an opportunity. And I really am not scared. That's kind of hard. It's even hard for me to understand. I know where I'm going. That part's not worrying me. The process of dying is a little different. But we have this panoply of drugs on the kitchen counter that will make you feel wonderful. And they act in about 5 minutes. So I'm really not too worried about the process, because I don't think I'm going to be here for it. But my prayer and my encouragement to you all now is to pray that I will continue to be strong, because pain does strange things to you, and it's not hard to lose it. So my prayer is that I will remain strong and faithful as we go down this road. Your turn.
When he says that God can perform a miracle or he can go home early, either way he wins, he wins, but I don't. So I struggle with thinking of, you know, what's coming ahead each day as how he is, how the end might be when it comes, and what will happen to me. And you can't help not thinking about those things. And since he takes a lot of naps, I have a lot of time to sit and think, because I try and not be running the vacuum or things that would disturb his sleeping. But God's been really good to me through this also. I, as many of you know, am a control freak. I need things organized, I need things planned out, and I need things to go the way we decide they're gonna go. And none of that has happened. This Dr. Bhandari, who we went to, the oncologist who was wonderful, and all his staff was wonderful, he has everybody in the world on his cell phone. So you go to his office and he says, well, you need a CAT scan. You need to see this man right away. And or tomorrow, you know, and no matter where you thought you were going, you're going to go someplace else and have a test or see another doctor or something, which has been wonderful because many people have waited long times to see the next specialist or get the next test. But I learned to keep a bottle of water, a granola bar, and a book in my pocketbook at all times because I never knew when I was going to get back home. But I hope that my family would agree that I have been relatively calm through this, not flying off the handle, not trying to rearrange everything all the time, just taking it one day at a time. I got out a little devotional book that I'd had called Jesus Calling. I don't know how many are familiar with it, but it's a daily devotional, and it's written as if Jesus was speaking to you in the first person. And I don't know how many times what I have read that morning has been so true for what came up during the day. It's a constant reminder that I am with you, I will not forsake you, I will be your guide. There are things that you can't control that are coming and you need to not worry about them because I've already taken care of them. And that's just been a real change in me to let it go and let God take me through the day. And that's my prayer, that we'll be able to continue that. The episode he referred to, we were going to go to the Grand Canyon. And Ham is the optimist. Everything's going to be fine. Don't worry about it. Let's go. I mean, his idea of a vacation is you get to the end of the driveway and you say, shall I turn right or shall I turn left? And don't worry about plans. I'm not like that. And we were going to go to the Grand Canyon, and I knew that he was having sometimes shortness of breath and he's not able to walk real long distances, so we're going to take a wheelchair. And we've traveled a lot, but he does everything. And I was concerned that now it was going to be my turn to do everything, luggage, wheelchair, person, whatever. And so if a little snag came along, he would say, don't worry about it, we can figure it out. So I had prayed, Lord, if we're not supposed to do this, you need to send a really strong message that we can't go. So we were supposed to leave on Wednesday, and on Tuesday morning, he woke up in excruciating pain like he had never had. And he had gotten up and taken one pain pill, and I woke up as he was coming back to bed and had taken the second one 20 minutes later. So I got on the phone and called hospice because I was afraid to give him something more with what he already had on board. And they said, give him a full syringe of morphine, and if it's not gone in 15 minutes, give him another one. And I'm like, okay, Lord, we're not going to the Grand Canyon, and this is a real strong message. And he said the same thing. He said, I think we're not going on the trip. So it's just another example of how God has worked with us through this thing. And I can't say enough about hospice. A lot of people are afraid to sign up for that because it's a sign that the end is coming, and they put it off because they don't want to think that way. I, even though I'm a nurse, my area of expertise is the operating room. We're not in an operating room, we're home. And I just was concerned that there might be some things that I didn't remember or know, or some tips that I wouldn't know. So we signed up for hospice, and one of the things they told us was that people that sign up early live longer. And their goal is comfort care, and it's whatever you need. And they have been absolutely wonderful. They, when I called that morning at 5:30 in the morning, they called me back in 5 minutes and called back 14 minutes later to see if the medicine had worked and should I give another one. And he doesn't remember those days because we gave him a lot of it. But they have worked with getting us on the right continual pain medicine with breakthrough medicine that we can give him. So we're doing okay right now. But we would covet your prayers for comfort and for continued peace. And again, as Ham said, my prayer also is that through this, God can see, that other people can see him through me, that I don't get in the way, which is what I usually tend to do. So we thank you for all the love and support you've given already, and we know that you will continue. Thank you.